This legislation affects every native in Alaska. There's a moral responsibility to allow each and every one of them insight into how this legislation will truly affect them. It's their right as stock owners and as Native Indian people. I feel like when the board feels like the share owners are stating something that's in imposes on them, that they can throw a scary circumstance such as $25,000 fines, indictments, felonies, as HB 251 quotes, towards the shareholders. I am personally tired of fearing the Alaska board when we wonder where the land went for Indian use and surmise, are they afraid of us when we ask? Do we get a satisfactory action on their part? No. We have never been afforded that respect or even the respect of a good and sound verbal response built on Indian principle. But we are treated with scare tactics, and bills such as HB 251 emerge. Many Indians only got Sea Alaska as a corporation. They have no land or an economic base to continue the Indian way of life. Our people are disappearing. They have nowhere to share in a common bond. And year after year, we cannot get Sea Alaska Corporation to listen. Bills such as this further prove to me that we cannot get through the corporate Berlin Wall that Sea Alaska has been steadfastly encroaching to incapacitate us. If this is such a good bill, why isn't it being applied to all corporations in the state? Do you know why? The severe and restrictive measures being placed on a low-income minority group of Indian people does not seem to be requiring an accounting for by anyone. This allows misconduct on the part of the board to solidify, and inquiries of concern for the corporation business from shareholders would go by unanswered, which we could do nothing about. It seems that this allows a board member to remain a member through any circumstances. The board will now be as though they own the corporation. Why do they have such a privilege before you? To no longer be responsible to the state, the Indians, or to anyone. We are not a passive people. We do care about what affects us and our elders. There is a 90-day regulation period being proposed in Section 2M on page 2 of the bill for petitions to be turned in. The cost for stockholders to turn in these petitions would be about $25,000 to $30,000 under this increase in petition signatures that the legislation calls for. What this legislation is in fact stating is that you must have about 3,000 signatures and $30,000, and you have 90 days from the date you began your petition to accomplish it all. While Indian people are poor, you'll never see it. An already repressed voice, an Indian, will never be heard again. I'm asking you to kill this bill. Our Indian people deserve to be heard. It has not been our right to challenge the management of Sea Alaska Corporation and specialists at the Social and Economic Division of the University in Anchorage have stated that if we could sell our stock, it would change. If severe rules such as this bill are forced upon the Indians, when the day comes to open up our stock, the board will once again remain unchallengeable, our stock holdings without share owner rights. When other corporations are not allowed to be stockholders within prison walls, why just Native Americans? Our Indian people do not deserve such destruction, such severe measures. I'm asking you to kill this bill. My grandmother, she was a real beautiful, full-blooded Athabascan Tsimshian Indian, and Indian language was her first language. She would sing Indian songs about every 8 minutes, and she was blind, and she longed to go to her Indian land. When I was a teenager, I really wished that I could bring her there, but when she passed away, it really hurt me that I couldn't do that for her. I believed morally from way back when the Claims Act passed that there was some type of a provision there for Indians to continue their way of life, yet my grandmother grieved till the day she died. And I want you to remain sensitive to the needs of the old Indian people. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Next, have a Ms. Frigo. And if you would, try to limit your comments to about three.
It's a real short. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bernice Trago. I belong to the Sea Alaska Corporation in Yakutat Quam. I oppose HB 521. I sat back believing my corporation was there to help us all these years. There wouldn't be the petitions for the distribution of the NOLs or the recall for the board of directors if they were doing what they were elected into office for. You talk about fines and prison time. I wouldn't have elected their directors into office if I knew they were going to introduce this bill. What corporation fines their shareholders these serious fines? I am a human being and will make mistakes, but should I be fined for something I don't fully understand? What about our freedom of speech? Please tell us HB 251. Finish, Chase. Thank you, and Clinkett.
Thank you for your brevity. It's greatly appreciated. We'll again turn back to Anchorage. Take Mr. Ed Carey, Jimmy Hartley, and we might as well do Helen.
Yes, hello. My name is Edward Casey. I reside in Anchorage at 4003 Minnesota Drive. I vote to claim the nation out of Wrangell, and I also oppose this bill 251, because I believe that this bill will further apartheid or make apartheid between our corporation and our shareholders. It will only further that. I oppose this as my fellow
major brothers have
down
in Juneau.
I say hello,
Mike,
that's all.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate your brief comments. Mr. Hartley.
Yes, I'm Jimmy D. Hartley. I'm a city shareholder. I am also a byproduct of the Siri Foundation. Being awarded two series scholarships. I'd like to remind everybody that we still live under a democracy. HB 251, one in a series of special interest legislation sponsored by Siri. It signals the desperation and the intention of our leadership, which does not have the support of the majority in these actions. It attacks the shareholder and director's basic freedoms of speech. RENDC buyback legislation politicians have been lobbied at considerable expense and have gotten severe public ridicule for their efforts and will probably lose their political tenure and voting support. Please do not allow yourself to be used as innocent pawns to propagate a dictatorship. Right now, 10% of the city shareholders has petitions for change. They have followed all of the legal guidelines for this change. If you support and vote for HB 251, it is another form of the KGB and the SS, and you might as well throw out the Constitution of the United States. To this day, this is the grossest form of special interest legislation Siri has sponsored to date. These issues will not go away and will only intensify. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you have your spouse there, or Helen?
Yes. My name is Helen Hartley, and I am 75 years old. As an elder of the Cook Inlet Regional Corporation, I am against House Bill 251.
Helen, does that conclude your testimony?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Sound very well for a 75-year-old spring chicken. I don't show anybody else in Anchorage that's there to testify on House Bill 251, nor do I show anybody else around the state on the teleconference system that's wishing to testify on HB 251. If there is anyone, would you speak out at this time? Hearing none, we will hold the teleconference lines open for another 10 minutes, at which point then we will terminate the teleconference line unless we get a request to hold it open for the listen only. I'm going to turn back to Juno here. Bertha Horton.
My name is Bertha Horton. I'm a Sea Alaska shareholder and GoBuy. When Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act came about in 1971, I was 10 years old, and my mother believed that we would be rich someday, that this corporation was here for the natives. Well, this bill tells me that we don't have a voice if we have concerns about our management. Sea Alaska is just trying to keep themselves in according to this bill, and I don't agree with the bill.
That concludes your comments?
Yes.
Questions? Thank you very much for being so patient. Mr. Mike Mann. Mike Mann from Huna.
Is Mike out there?
Mike Mann. No, he's not here.
Okay, then how about Pat Sierra?
Sign me up, you. Good thing I had something written down. My name is Pat Sierra, and I'm a Sea Alaska Angle Belt shareholder. If House Bill 251 is passed without the knowledge of its existence to the entire population of the nearly 75,000 Native stockholders enrolled in these ANSCA corporations that it affects, then it can be compared to the blankets filled with smallpox germs that were handed out to wipe out unknowing and unsuspecting groups of Indians. This bill will wipe out rights of a minority group of stockholders that are slowly becoming a majority. And they are dissatisfied with the way their corporations are being run. Instead of passing laws against the stockholders, who are supposed to be the owners of the corporation, stiffer laws should be passed against the directors, who do not conform to corporate laws already in existence. For example, not one time in Sea Alaska corporate history have we been asked about assets affecting our corporation, like buying and selling of major assets. I understand under corporate law that this is a major issue that must come before the stockholders before it can be dealt with. They have never asked us to vote on anything like that. They've sold some of our biggest money makers. They've never asked us. And so they're breaking the law. Why are they getting away with it? As stockholders, corporate laws that we have to comply with, they're already stiff enough. For example, not one recall attempt has ever succeeded due to the voting laws under state statutes. This bill is not to benefit all of us, but to benefit present management and directors to secure what they now have to ensure their future, as they are the only ones benefiting from the corporation. ANSCA was our grandparents' dream. It has become our nightmare. Instead of passing this bill into law, take a look at what is going on in these corporations today. Find out why there are so many recall attempts, not only at Sea Alaska, but basically all the other corporations. Compare it to what was supposed to happen when ANSCA was passed. Not only is this bill unnecessary, it is discriminating against the Native people. Have you got separate corporate laws for blacks, Hispanics, Filipinos, or any other non-white group if they should decide to form a corporation? Where are our equal rights as guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution? The black people have been freed from slavery a long time ago, but the Indians are still wards of the government. This is 1995. It's time we also are granted some freedoms, like the freedom to have a say in our corporation as its owners, so appointed by federal law under ANSCA. If you pass this bill without full knowledge, disclosed to everyone it affects, it's time for us to ask for a congressional hearing. There is something wrong in this state as for its dealings with the corporations and its insensitivity treatment of the stockholder. Is it because the corporation has our money to lobby for such a ridiculous bill, while the stockholder only has ideas as to how they would like their corporation ran? Has ANSCA become like other treaties made between the Indians and the government, a broken treaty with unkept promises? As lawmakers, do you ever really care how a bill affects the people? Or do you just sit back and vote yes and say, well, the taxpayers got their money's worth today, I helped pass a bill. You were elected to serve the people and to listen to them. Therefore, as a native and a taxpayer, I'm asking you to table this bill until hearings in every city, town, and village can be held to make every native stockholder aware of this bill and listen to what they have to say about it. Then you will be able to say, I've done my job well. I've listened to the people. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Kroloff?
I wasn't going to testify.
Oh, that's right. Okay. It says you did want to testify, but I think you've already done it. Ada Patterson.
My name is Ada Patterson. I'm a Sea Alaska shareholder. during one recall, we passed out flyers against Sea Alaska, and my main question was, where was the interest earned on the permanent fund? And this really disrupted the management, and within a month they had $12 million put into the permanent fund because of that one question that I had about where the interest was. And that just goes to show that there's a lot of crap that's going on. It's these shareholders, these people, we die. We die every day, and there are managements there, like Byron Millat, who retired at $160,000 a year for life, and the shareholders get a measly few bucks here and there, and if you take away our rights of what we already have, it's really extremely hard to process petitions and come up with the slate. It is extremely hard to raise money to get new candidates, independent candidates, into the corporation. And it's just a non-stop battle. We as shareholders, we are born with the right. We were born, it's our birthright, and we should be able to have our say-so in the corporation's doings, and they're just taking money for themselves, and we want a share of our heritage, our birthright. And we've waited many years, and we will probably never see or get anything from them that is worth the values, such as the land. And I'm not much on my history, but I sure could hear our forefathers saying, give me liberty or give me death. And we want the freedom to do what we need to do in order to keep the corporation up to par to our needs. And it's our survival kit, and that's all we have left. That's all we have to our name. Our culture is dead too, so we have nothing. And we need them to listen to us. And it's just extremely hard. I've been in several recalls myself, and I ended up dealing with severe depression. I have to take pills, most likely for the rest of my life. I mean, I'm just fried to no end. And to raise the amount of people for signatures and everything just takes our rights away.
Thank you. Next, I have Ms. Dale Oba.
Okay, my name is Gail Anagek Schubert. Ova was my previous name. I'm married since. I don't have any prepared remarks. I just found out visiting upstairs that this hearing was being held. I'm a shareholder of the Uniclate Native Corporation and the Bering Straits Native Corporation, and I sit on the board of directors of the Bering Straits Native Corporation. I'd like to speak out in support of the bill because I know that there have been a number of recall and other petitions that have occurred in the past several years by minority or dissident shareholders. And one of the complaints that that I've heard, and I've heard it in connection with the Bering Straits board as well, is that it's a closed board, and so, you know, shareholders who have an opinion that differs with the directors don't have a chance to be heard. My argument has always been that when you have an election, even if you have a board slate, shareholders are entitled to vote for whoever they want to on the board slate or off the board slate. When I ran, I ran as an independent. There was a board slate, and I was elected, and it was because there were enough shareholders who voted for me that, you know, I was able to get on. So shareholders can have a voice in how these corporations are managed and what happens. And I think that the amount of time and money that goes into these, you know, either the recall or some of the other activities could be better spent elsewhere. You know, when these regional native corporations were set up, we went forward very quickly into the 20th century. And I think that, you know, some of the regional leaders that are being attacked today have done a lot of good for natives. You know, Roy Hondorf sitting in the audience today, for example. You know, I have a lot of respect for him. I think that he's done a lot of good for natives, I think that you know, this bill makes sense, I think that it should be passed.
Thank you. Questions?
I have one question.
Sure.
Is it your observation that the more successful Native corporations are the ones that are having the most of these problems?
Yes. I think it is. I mean, if you look at Sea Alaska, Siri. Those are the two Native corporations that I've heard that have had the most problems of late, and I think that if you look at the annual reports, you'll see that in fact they have been the most successful, and that's why I don't really understand why this is going on, because, you know, it's these people who have done very well and who've been really successful that are being attacked, and I don't understand it. You don't really see these recall efforts. You know, I don't mean to speak poorly of my own regional Native corporation, but, you know, you don't see any activity like that, and I can't believe that it's because people don't care.
Representative Bean?
Mr. Chairman. From what I'm feeling from this, there's a lot of some who have and some who have not, and I see it in the room, and when we see people representing the corporations, they really seem to be the natives that can dress better, can have more material things. Is the native corporations not working to help spread the wealth to all native groups?
I disagree with your observation, and if you're directing it at me, for example, because I happen to, you know, have a warmer coat on.
I didn't mean that, but take it as a whole. I mean, the people really with all the native groups, and then the dissidents, that those of us that are not involved, and they're labeled dissidents, and they really do seem to be the poorer group. I mean, am I way off base? Is this not relative? Please, let her.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know enough about, you know, the population base of the regional Native corporations that are experiencing these problems. I can tell you for myself that you know, I was born and raised in Yenlaklit. I was one of nine children growing up. I come from a fairly well-educated family. We were poor as hell, you know, no running water, no electricity, nothing. When my father was hospitalized for 6 months for TB, you know, my mother didn't want to go out to ask for support to feed us, and I remember on Thanksgiving she sent us to the church with a bowl so that we could get some reindeer soup. Yeah. And she stayed home, and ate dried fish or something. She used to have to borrow dried fish, you know, to feed us. But, you know, I and several of my other sisters went on and got an education, and because of that I have, you know, options available to me, and those are options that are available to everyone. Anyone else here in this room, and I'm sure there are lots of others who have done it, but, you know, could have the same options available to them.
Can I, a little farther, Mr. Chairman? I don't know. I guess I'm looking for a reason why there's so many people here, why it's so much problems, or at least for those of us that aren't involved with the Native corporations, why we see so much and feel so much emotion involved in people that are, I don't know, it's just seems split so much, and I'm trying to figure out if something's going wrong and if there's a way that we can help make it better so that the corporations can succeed in their, you know, their goals to bring everybody together somehow. It seems like that's what they were for.
Yeah, but I think that if you look at who is being attacked, it's the corporations that have been really successful, and I don't think it's my understanding that this bill just brings state law to comply, or comport state law to federal law. I'm not a securities expert, so I'm not absolutely sure, but I don't think it's up to the state legislature or, you know, any legislative body to dictate to any management team how they should or should not their corporations. I mean, you know, these people are in charge, know the capital structure. They know, you know, what it is that they have to do to make the corporation grow. And I think that it would be great, you know, for me personally to get a huge $5,000 or $10,000 dividend out of a corporation. But you know, my concern is in ensuring that the corporation is healthy, stays healthy, continues to grow, and is there to you know, protect my interests, my children's interests, my grandchildren's interests on into the future. I don't favor seeing any huge payouts that, you know, might damage any of the corporate structures. And I think that, you know, that in some respects is what some of the shareholders have been asking. And I can understand that, you know, there's a desire to share the wealth, but I think that by the same token, it's necessary to ensure that the corporation remains viable.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the list of individuals that are here to testify, with the exception of Mr. Kirkpatrick from Banking and Securities Corporation, which I do want to get to. Is there anyone else here in Juneau that wishes to testify in this bill that have not signed up? Please step forward.
I would like to just make a couple of statements. My name is Gloria Sarabia.
Could you pick that up?
And I'm a Sue Alaska and Gold Belt shareholder. I didn't plan to speak, but the coat brought me out, I have to tell you. If she's really for us, don't wear this. Don't wear your $500 suits. I'm here in a special from Kmart. Everything I wear come from clearance racks at Kmart or Costco or any of the little stores downtown. I can't even afford to shop at something like Lamont's. I can't afford nice clothing. I have 30 years of service with the state of Alaska. Don't diminish it. And you, sir, almost insulted my intelligence when you asked, if we were to recall the board, wouldn't it be disruptive? We have an awful lot of intelligent people. The board of directors are not the only ones. They only hold us in bondage, as so many of us have testified. The only recourse that we have is recall, and you're about to take that from us. I implore you to please table this, or at least vote against it. I want, and I'll say right now, why shouldn't I want to live in the lifestyle to which they have become accustomed just for one day? Just for one day, I would like to live with a lot of money. And anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 to me is a lot of money. Do not diminish my 30 years of service. That is my intelligence. I have worked as hard as anybody with a degree. I may not have gone to college. I am the oldest of eight kids myself. Not one of us, except my brother, has been to college. And he is the only state Indian coordinator in the United States of America with the state of Connecticut. He's very well learned himself, and he supports us shareholders for shareholders. And he told me to say that he is definitely against HB 251. My entire family is against it. My mothers, my sisters, my brother, my children. We're all shareholders. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Questions? I just want to make a comment. If I've insulted anybody's intelligence out there, that certainly wasn't my intent. I'm trying to see answers. I'm trying to understand the issues. I'm not a member of a Native corporation, nor have I ever been.
Then please try to understand them, sir.
So I'm trying to put myself into your shoes and trying to understand the whole concept. And I'm sure there are very, very capable people that's ready to step forward into these board of director positions if they become vacant. And I can relate my experience with, let's say, the U.S. Senate. In the Senate, we don't change all 100 senators at one time. There's some continuity. There's staggered terms. And I'm just kind of relating myself to that particular picture and then trying to correlate it with shareholders. It just seems to me that they're potentially could be some disruption. I mean,
the way I see it, Mr. Chairman,
it's like an office manager leaving and next day somebody else comes in. I mean, where do you start?
The way I see it, Mr. Chairman, is CLASCA started 25 years ago with people who knew nothing. You have people who know a lot today, whether they're brand new to the board, whether they're going to have to replace anybody or not. They know a lot. We know a lot.
Thank you.
Just real brief, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for this opportunity. I learned about this piece of legislation 11:30 this morning, downtown Juneau, and I am Catherine Price. I am a CLASCA shareholder, and the question, Mr. Chairman, that you raised with regard to the legality of this piece of legislation, all I ask is that this committee thoroughly do the research and find out if this truly is legal to make these kinds of changes to treat Alaska Native people, as I heard in earlier testimony, because we are unique, that we need a special law that would separate us from other corporate statutes. I am very concerned about that, so please do the research before you make any decisions. Thank you.
You wish to comment?
Yes.
Gail? Briefly.
Yes, I will. I just like to, speak to what the woman sitting in the back said. You know, I certainly meant no insult to anyone sitting in this room. And also, I don't owe this coat to my native corporations. I mean, if I've gotten $500 in dividends from Bering Straits since I've been a shareholder, that might be it. I owe this coat to the fact that I went to school for 21 years, and I'm an attorney. I'm proud of it. I worked very hard. I worked for 8 years on Wall Street in New York City, it was tough. So I'm not going to make excuses for how I dress, and I certainly do not owe it to the Native corporations.
Thank you for that clarifier. I'm sure that no one on this committee will hold the fact that you're attorney against you. Representative Broberg.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if Mr. Hundler wanted to make some comments. I have a couple of questions for him.
I think before we do that, and I don't know what the schedule of Mr. Hundler is, if he's in town. It's not the intent to move us out of this committee today. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. I thought originally that we could probably get to them all, but obviously we're not. I think Representative Fabina has a number of questions. I myself have several that relate to the legal aspect, more or less, and perhaps Mr. Kirkpatrick can address some of them, but I think the others are going to have to be run through legal, and in light of that, we do have floor session at 6 o'clock. I know we have been on the go since we got off the floor. We still would like to get something to eat before we're on the floor for another 4 or 5 hours tonight. So if the committee wishes to continue, I'm certainly willing to proceed. However, in light of everything else, right?
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hunter will probably be leaving town here. There's only an opportunity to testify. So. And I know we're going to hold this over, obviously. So. If you would so desire. What It's your, you are the chairman.
If you have some questions to Mr. Hundorf, and he's not going to be in town on Wednesday, then maybe we can call him back up.
Right. If we could, sir. Mr. Hundorf. Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity. I'd just like to ask Mr. Hundorf, for having witnessed the testimony today, if there's any questions or any statements you'd like to make about what's going on here today.
Well, I think there is a lot of testimony here that has been sharply conflicting in terms of people being very pro or very con what is being proposed in HB 251. I would submit to you that that this is about dividend and distribution policy. The corporations, some of them have become quite successful and have increased their net worths and their cash flows and their net income substantially. We at Siri, for example, have a policy of distributing about 50% of our net profits in dividends to our shareholders. And we have been coming under a lot of pressure from a minority of shareholders to distribute more. And the board, of course, is caught with the on one side of the question with their duty toward to the corporation to be prudent in terms of the distributions they make and the liquidity that they maintain in the company. And on the other hand, they know that the people asking for more money need money. They're, in many cases, they're desperately poor, and they want more money. And it's really hard to explain why you have to keep the corporation alive and you have to plow at least some of the net profits back into the growth of the company in order that the company will be around and alive for generations to come, which we all sort of think was the intent of the original framers of the Settlement Act in Congress and the hope of Native people. So there's no good guys or bad guys here. It's just that as the corporations grow and become more liquid, there is an increased demand by people who are not very well off to want more of that money, and all of a sudden you have accusations flying back and forth. There are bad guys, there are criminals in the corporations, there are self-perpetuators, there are no goodniks of various kinds, and of course anger flows the other way as well. There are accusations that people are using false and misleading statements and soliciting proxies and signing up people for petitions to have special meetings, etc. So anger is up. Money is the root of it. This is really a question of money, and that's why the disruption in the Native community in these recent months that you've seen, in my view. Siri has grown, for example, from $34 million in 1971, roughly, to a corporation with net worth of about $435 million, a nearly double-digit, nearly 20% growth a year. So it's quite natural that people see this and would want more of it. And dividends have been increasing each year. In the last 3 years, in 1 year, we distributed 62% of our net income in 1 year. And that is quite a high dividend for any corporation that wants to stay in business. So I just sort of try to, in my mind, give you my impression of what is going on. So as a committee, you may have a little more of an idea of why these provisions are here. The corporations obviously cannot conduct business if they're perpetually holding special meetings. 10% is easy to get. You can sign up 10% in just a few days to have a special meeting. And the tragedy of it is these special meetings are advisory in nature, mostly because state law prohibits shareholders from voting themselves dividends, for example, or from making major policy changes in the fiscal management of the company. State law simply doesn't allow it, and it only becomes advisory to a board who then becomes threatened or feel threatened and go into a siege mentality about what they should or shouldn't do. They're threatened by being told they're going to lose their board seats, and of course nobody likes to be fired. So you have this tension going on, and it's in some ways it's a healthy tension, but in some ways it has become a very unhealthy tension. And it needs to be solved. I think that many of us, including Siri, will be going and trying to go into more participatory kinds of modes with shareholders where they can participate in the policy planning and hopefully understand why companies pay dividends at certain levels and why to go beyond that level you're really endangering the company and in effect liquidating it. So we hope to do this in the future, and we've done a lot of things. We thought we were doing a lot of right things, but it ended up, I guess we didn't ask our shareholders to participate in the planning and recommend some of the policies that resulted in some of the things we did do. So that's the way I kind of see it, Mr. Chairman, and maybe that would give you some guidance in what you're doing here today.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick quick follow-up questions. One, it seems to me from my own personal knowledge that Mr. Hundorf is probably the most underpaid executive in North America in the 70s and 80s. If you'd like to comment on that, I wouldn't mind, Mr. Hundorf. But also in addition, could you tell me, isn't it true that the solid decision-making made by the board of directors at SERI generated the land selections and the ability to acquire assets, which are probably one of the most important sources of income for all corporations under the 7I provisions? Would that be a fair statement?
That is a statement that is true in that we, to the extent we were able to select lands that had oil and gas bearing potential, we were able to do that and generate revenues under the Section 7 of ANCSA, which requires a sharing with other regions where a producing region must share 70% with other regions. As I recall, since we came into existence, we have shared in excess of $200 million with the other regions. That is, distributions have gone out from SERI due to our land selections and the luck that we had there.
That's maybe where Bering Straits got their money for the $500?
Some of the money that Bering Straits received came from 7I. As to pay, the corporations all share a dilemma there, too, because one of the things that corporations try to do that have a sense of management and the continuity of management is to try to pay market levels of salaries so that when a person looks at his salary, it's neither above or below the middle of the market, and that's where we try to strive. That's what we try to strive to do in SERI. It's important that managers don't have reasons to quit or look for new jobs. And if they're paid under the market consistently, even though they like their job, they will eventually feel used and put upon and look to go somewhere, find a new job that pays more. So we don't like that kind of turnover of skilled people in our company, and so we try to pay middle of the market. And that is quite high because our corporation is quite large and it's compared to other corporations in America that do similar things. And so that's the market we compete in. And it's hard for shareholders, again, who don't have a lot of income and are feeling the pinch to understand why executives in corporations like SERI get paid as they do. But that is the reasoning. We try to follow a philosophy of paying the middle of the market and that causes some problems for us.
Mr. Hundorf, Mr. Chairman, isn't it true, though, that SERI had no retirement program for, like, the first 12 years of its existence or something?
They have no retirement program now.
They have no retirement.
They have a 401k, and they have a small profit-sharing program that builds some annuity, but that's in comparison to other companies that have profit-sharing, I mean, that have retirement plans and have stock options, et cetera. SERI has none of that now.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing no further questions, if we call the Ralph, Carl, you had a question.
Don't worry, I wanted to make an announcement.
Oh.
I probably won't be running for statewide office next election.
Oh. Excuse me. Appreciate that comment. I wonder maybe if we can get Pat. Sierra?
Yes?
Wait, no, not Pat. Mark.
Yeah.
Come up to the table. I have a couple. The in the sponsor statement itself, and I think we've heard mentioned, it indicates that the 25% requirement, we're adjusting the percentage from 10 to 25, would bring Alaska's law into conformity with federal statute. Can you cite specifically what federal statute we are addressing? I've looked and I've been unable to come up with it. I don't know if it was in the original ANSCA Act or what. But
I don't know if I can do the number off the top of my head because I don't have the book with me, but I can explain to you exactly where it is. As ANCSA was originally passed in 1971, it called for it provided that the stock that the native shareholders would receive would be subject to very strict alienability limitations, which were the stock could not be sold or pledged or seized in foreclosure. And those restrictions were originally to end 20 years from the passage of ANCSA, or in 1991. And you've heard a lot of references to 1991 today. And that's the reason for those references. In 1988, ANCSA was amended by Congress in a way that dealt with those alienability restrictions, and the rule was essentially changed so that rather than the restrictions expiring automatically in 1991, they stayed in place automatically unless 50% plus one of the shares voted to lift them. So rather than having the restrictions expire, Congress in essence gave authority to the shareholders to make that decision for themselves, whether to continue the restrictions or not. It also provided a mechanism for shareholders to bring that decision before the corporation. And there are two ways it can come about. The board of directors can bring before the shareholders its own motion, in essence, or resolution to lift the restrictions. Or shareholders may petition the company for a vote to lift the restrictions if the board of directors does not bring that vote before them. And it's that provision of ANCSA that set the petition level at 25%. And the argument that has been made to you today, I believe, can be summarized as follows. That when Congress did not mandate that every petition be 25%, and so I want to be clear about that. The state would not be required to make everything a 25% threshold. But the argument that's being made to you is that when Congress considered what is probably the most important subject that shareholders could bring before their corporation for a vote, which is to retain or to remove the restrictions on alienability of Native corporation stock, Congress set 25% as the threshold. And the reason it did that is so that there would have to be a relatively significant level of support for the petition before it could be brought. Even if it was not majority support at the time it was brought, it had to at least be a significant minority. And the argument that's being made to you today is if that very important question requires such a threshold, the proponents of the bill feel that these kinds of questions that are not of the same significance, largely because they're of an advisory nature only, should require a similar threshold, and that the corporation should not be subjected to repeated calls for meetings on matters that are of lesser significance and are advisory only with a lesser minority of shareholders supporting them.
It's clear as mud.
Sorry. I tried.
Yeah, I assume you have worked on this piece of legislation with the bill sponsor, at least provided some insight on the approach to take. And I guess the second question I have, which deals with the 90-day period that petitions have to gain the required number of signatures. You know, as mobile and as scattered as the shareholders could be, and I'm thinking about one of the larger corporations with several thousand, is it within reason to place this restriction of 90 days on them? Is that a reasonable requirement in order to gain the required number of signatures?
I think so, and I'll tell you why. I have a couple of reasons why I think that's the case.
I haven't been involved in any petitioning before, so I'm just asking the question. Ignorant to the facts.
Here's why I think it is. State law provides right now that for a proxy campaign for an annual meeting to elect directors, which is probably the other most important thing that shareholders vote on, the notice requirement is as low as 20 and no longer than 60 days. That people, let's say either those who support management or those who disagree with management, have to contact all the shareholders to get in their proxies and to cast those at the meeting. And these meetings have gone on for 20 years, and you heard some complaints today from some shareholders who thought 20 days was too short, but I haven't ever heard anybody say that 60 days is too short. and you can do it in 20, and that happens from time to time. So this 90-day period, the whole point of this bill is to treat these petitions like proxies, which is in essence what they're like. And it provides a longer period than you would have to solicit votes for a director, which is a considerably more significant act. The second reason I think it's enough, you heard some calls today for modeling Native corporation governance on SEC rules, and the SEC has the same or even a more stringent requirement. I'm not an expert in federal securities laws, but I think it's similar or even shorter.
Okay, that was a little more understandable than the first one. This bill would make it a criminal offense to solicit support for a request for a special meeting without first notifying the corporation. Can you comment on the reasonableness of that aspect of it? And more importantly, does it perhaps infringe on the shareholders' rights of free expression?
Okay, let's take those one at a time. Should there be criminal penalties? I don't think Siri has a particular view in favor of criminal penalties. I think that's in there because I think the bill just incorporates the proxy rules that are already in law for willful violations of the proxy rules. And if the committee didn't feel comfortable with that, I don't think Siri would care. But does it violate people's free speech rights? I don't think so as a legal matter, because your free speech rights are between a citizen and the government and not between a shareholder and a corporation. And even between citizen and the government can impose reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on them. And I guess that would be the analogy here.
Representative Roeperg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott, there was some testimony today earlier that indicated that now there's like a year or unlimited period for petitioning. Is there any time frame presently?
I heard someone say a year, but I'm not familiar enough with that to know.
There's no limit?
Yeah, this lady's saying there's none. I don't have any reason to think she's wrong.
Okay, so there's no limit.
No limit.
Okay.
I think one of the problems is that this is an area, at least as I understand it, that the securities administrator is kind of unsure about his jurisdiction to regulate.
Because they're advisory votes or not?
No, because my understanding is he's not certain whether these petitions are proxies or not.
Just for the information of the committee, on the penalty, it would be a felony, not less than 1 year, not more than five.
Yeah.
Additional questions for Mr. Bella?
Thank you.
Alan. Representative Elton.
Mr. Chair, I don't know what your plan is, but I can tell you that as a dissident Democrat in a legislative body dominated by majority Republicans, I mean, there are some questions that have come up here that need to be answered. I guess I would doubt that we can answer them in the next 20 minutes. And I know that Mr. Kirkpatrick is here and has been waiting patiently, but I think it would be good for the committee to have Mr. Kirkpatrick come back at a point in time where there's enough time for questions from me and from other members of the body. I guess the concern that I have is a lot of people have shown up to testify today and would be interested in the disposition. I think it may be fair to have those people who want to come back when the committee takes it up again to have them leave their names and the telephone number so that we can get in touch with them when it does come back up. But having said that, I can tell you that I'm going to need my energy this evening, and it would be nice to get a bite to eat.
Are you moving for recess, sir, or adjournment?
Well, I would move
and I'll object
for that.
Just for the purpose of inviting Mr. Kirkpatrick up to the table just for a very, very brief bit of dialogue. Since he did come here on, I guess, a holiday, I think it is a state holiday, somebody said. And well, it's just for the record, just state your name and I'll tell you what the plan is.
My name is Willis Kirkpatrick. I'm the Director of Banking, Securities, and Corporations for the State of Alaska Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Please excuse my attire. No disrespect to the committee, sir.
Perfectly. Quite all right. We appreciate you being here today. I held you off until the last because I know just knew there were going to be some questions that would come up based on the testimony that we've heard, and I think they have. And you heard some of my questions as they have come up from time to time, as well as other committee members. And I think Representative Elton makes a good point that obviously in 20 minutes, in less than 5 minutes, we can't get all our questions answered. So if you would, if you can basically just provide a very, very brief synopsis of the bill as you see it, and I would invite you back. We'll hold the bill over until Wednesday and invite you back then to perhaps cover some of the more intricate matters. Representative Porter?
Chairman, in all honesty, if we're going to come back, I would prefer that he have his testimony at one time so that it's together. Because I'll just be having to ask him what he said. And it's unfortunate that the timing is such that we almost made it but didn't. But I would suggest that perhaps we need, based on what we may or may not be able to obtain from Mr. Kirkpatrick, somebody from the Department of Law that deals with securities and corporations matters also. So,
Mr. Kirkpatrick, have a very nice evening. We're all available until Wednesday, and we're adjourned.
Wednesday, for everybody in the audience, Wednesday at 3, right?